charge the Ion Accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Battle of Souls podcast, joined by Red Powell,
what up?
Adam Camilleri, and Tanya Gates.
G'day.
Hey everybody.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Kind of like a back-to-back show. You know, one just came out. Oh man, the time zones and CloudStrike. Mess me up. But welcome everyone. We're fresh off of the Tacoma Open, U.S. Open Series of Games Workshop Tacoma Open, where Red Knight, you were there.
I sure was.
And we'll talk about that. And Adam and Tanya, saw y'all in the chat.
Yeah, I try to catch as much as I can. I know, obviously, I work every day of the week for a little bit, so I can't catch the whole thing. But yeah, I loved the gameplay that I saw. The shoutcasting was really great. I love the energy that you and Nick bring, and Tech Priest Werner too. Just awesome.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I was able to catch about an hour or two a day. Naturally, you guys start at like, well, Pacific standard is you guys usually kick off a little after midnight, maybe around 1 a.m. So, you know, I was catching the last like hour or two of your game three coverage. And yeah, it was stupendous. You guys did a great job.
Oh, well, thank you all so much. We had some good games to cover this past weekend. Some well-painted armies, too. Like, we were kind of fortunate enough to get, like, highly competitive and beautiful armies on at the same time.
Oh, mate, there was a match I watched, which was Votan versus Chaos Space Marines, and it was a stunning spectacle.
I completely agree. And a funny thing is that Chaos Space Marine player, that was his first tournament. He was undefeated until, like, what, round 6 or something.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, and a great list too. You know, a lot of kind of like flooding the board with legionaries, and it was a nice Chaos Space Marine list, a little bit different than you see.
And he was playing against like an absolute veteran, one of the best players in the United States, going through I think 6th and 7th edition. So he's been a long-standing veteran and was undefeated in the 6th round as well. That you couldn't have it more beautiful. Somebody's probably got like 20, like, you know, 10 plus years of competitive experience, or somebody at their first GT. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and that Votan army was also gorgeous. Like, I commented several times about it. They were all the object source lighting or highlighting or whatever was done from the same perspective. So if the army was sitting on a display board, then it looked, I got the impression like they were on like an asteroid or some planet somewhere, and the sun's creeping up over the horizon, you know, kind of thing. That's the way, and just totally shining off that the army in that golden hour.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. Before I get too deep in this, I also want to say it was awesome to see some FTN shirts out in the wild.
Hey, did you take pictures?
I did.
Sneak pictures?
I did. I was like, cool shirt. You know, every time I saw one.
Did they know it was you?
Maybe I'll take it. May is a yes, maybe. You know, but everyone likes to have, you know, hear a cool shirt shouted at him. That's it's not too weird, right?
Nah.
Another thing, we have an affiliate link in the show notes, and this is for the Warhammer merch site.
Ooh.
So check it out if you are looking to get like any of the Joy Toy figures, like Magnus and the Thousand Sun Terminators. These are spectacular. Y'all, we've talked about them before. They are highly articulated, and you could play with these things. Like, you could play Kill Team with these giant models, and you're going to feel like you're using miniatures. But anyway, we have an affiliate.
Harkening back to the old Inquisitor days, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. What was it?
Yeah.
58 millimeter or something scale?
58 mil, yeah.
Anyway, there's tons of cool stuff up there. You can click on the link and see if there's anything that interests you. If you were going to get something anyway, you might as well use the affiliate link, and it would help the show out. But talk about the armies at Tacoma. Just one, you know, beautiful armies. It was an incredibly large grand tournament of over 400 players, and that was just in the 40K side. Like, there were thousands of people there, what it felt like. There was hobby stuff. There was a Sigmar tournament, first big tournament of the new edition. Kill Team, Blood Bowl, Legion Imperialis, Painting Academy. What am I missing, Red?
The Academy of Paint was awesome looking. It was a big deal. Andy Wardle ran it, and it was like a whole weekend activity. It was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, very excited to be a part of that. And just everywhere you looked in that cool convention hall with the big windows, Mount Rainier, off in the distance. It's like a Bob Ross painting.
It is. Hmm. Yeah, it was pretty remarkable.
Just beautiful.
Tacoma was really nice, too.
Did you get out some?
Well, I went out early for a little jog, and then I did get out in the evenings after the games were over. So it was really nice, morning and night.
Yeah, I think I passed you and one of the painter guys heading out as I was crashing.
I just had such a good day. I couldn't end that quickly. I'm sorry.
Adeptus Oratos did really well over the weekend.
They did. Yeah, there were some good games with Sisters of Battle out there for sure.
There's been some critiques with the Adeptus Oratos list that I think some generals didn't feel like they had quite as much like list as they used to in their army. But I will say that the person playing Adeptus Oratos did incredibly well with moving and screening and, I mean, you name it, just a clinic on maneuvering, as maybe you would call it, Red. And I don't feel like they were missing anything on that list.
It's awesome. It's always good to see that kind of that level of play.
Yes, Sisters are in a very interesting position. Some say they are the best army in the game at the moment, or possibly, you know, equal best. And they just kind of do it all in a very unique way. Like, whereas, you know, people would say Blood Angels is just like melee weapons are strapped to jump packs and somehow very angry. Sisters are doing much the same things, but usually wielding shooting from close range. It's almost like, I mean, one of the best units that Sisters have going for at the moment is Seraphim in the Bringers of Flame detachment specifically, because they have a minimum amount of shots. They'll get their D6 plus one on their hand flamers, and 10 Seraphim plus a Cannoness or Celestine is just a beautiful multimodal unit that clears hordes, can do mortal wounds with stratagem support, and then has a beat stick wrapped up in a bunch of, you know, 3-up saves that have an invuln with the support of Miracle Dice. And so they're an army that no longer has the infinity models that they, infinity units they used to have, because you'd have like 3 units of Death Cult Assassins, 3 units of Crusaders, 3 units, you know, it just went forever. Like me and Paul would like read off lists on one of our other shows, and like usually I would have like 2 or 3, I'd have to take 2 or 3 breaths to read off a Space Marine list. I'd be running out of breath reading off the Sisters list.
And that's just saying something.
Yeah, you hear how I speak. You guys know. But in addition, you know, they have some of the best units in the game. Morven Vale and a unit of Paragon Warsuits is the I can solve any problem unit. You pay the points for it, because I think she's 130 plus and they're 210. So you're looking at, you know, somewhat near a fifth of your army in this unit. But that unit can do everything.
But it shoots missiles, it shoots meltas, it can hit in combat. It's got tricks it can do.
It has one of the most devastating overwatches in the game with 4 rerolls to hit for also wound and miracle dice.
Yep.
It comes on from reserve with miracle dice for an auto charge and miracle dice for a shooting asset to die. So it's one of the best counters to the transport meta that we have burgeoning at the moment, with transports being taken pretty much by everybody. And so it comes out, you know, and it's a transport, it's a self-contained transport solution. You come out, multi-melters, missiles, hell, shoot the missile somewhere else, and multi-melters probably almost definitely do it by themselves with miracle dice and all the rerolls, and then bam, slap down whichever miracle dice you need to make sure you charge for the contents, wipe them off, and you probably flip an objective in the process. They can just kind of do it all. I believe they are like the general's army at the moment for this, the sheer depth of play you have every turn. It's kind of stunning.
You mentioned miracle dice a bunch there. We should walk down how miracle dice work.
Suffice to say, I'm playing Space Marines against Sisters, and as far as I can tell, they just cheat.
So, miracle dice, what this Adeptus Oratos player does is they will roll a miracle die in certain situations. They roll them, well, they get miracle dice when a unit dies, then you roll a die, and it goes into a pool. The result that you roll goes into a pool. You can then use that result to replace something you would have rolled. So a guaranteed result on a D6. It is similar to fate dice, but at the same time, totally different. You don't get a pool. It's conditions. Things have to happen for you to get a bunch of miracle dice.
Yeah, I suppose this is one of the things that have changed, I guess, in Sisters players' minds, or sorry, Sororitas players' minds, is that before, when they just had a density of raw model units, they just had units for days, And every time one of those dies, it would be actually gassing up the rest of their army via miracle dice. And of course, you had shenanigans in which to plus or minus the different quantities or different values on your dice, making them more reliable, et cetera, et cetera. And so every time something died or something traded out on an objective, you might, whilst you may have lost points, you gained value that you can spend to make other units better. And that's just a, such a fundamentally powerful position to be starting from. And I think there's a bit of a bit more of a learning curve with what you can be, you are willing to lose and not willing to lose with, I guess, the new points delineation from the Minotaurian Field Manual, because you can't just throw things away as a Sisters player anymore. You have to use a lot more nuance, but you get to this critical mass where both players are kind of at the end of the game, you know, you've got, comes to turn four, you've both got maybe a quarter of your armies left because you've been slogging it out. And, you know, I've got an Apothecary Biologus and two Eradicators. And you've got three Dominion, like, you know, Misc Dominion squads and an Immolator and stuff like that. And you're cool. My unit can do one thing really well. But with Miracle Dice, every Melter Gun is a potent weapon. Every Immolator is so critical for, you know, making a Miracle Dice charge and shutting down a piece of shooting. All those things. And I find that's where the beauty of the Sisters comes into form. Like in those when the chips are down, I have assurances as a Sisters player.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, we do everything we can as players to take luck out of the equation. Like, we never want variance in our consistently, you know, trying to win a tournament kind of thing.
And the snowball effect of the Miracle Dice is not just to be felt in the fact that you have assurances with the things you're trying to execute, you know, when the chips are down. It's the fact that Miracle Dice somewhat replace things other armies spend CP to do. Like, you know, how many times have you, the Rhino has four wounds left, and this is the last melter shot you have. You have a unit lined up to charge the contents. If you don't kill the Rhino, you've traded out nothing. The unit gets out, picks you up. So this melter gun, the wound that just went through, needs to roll a 2 because you're in melter range. So you're 2+2 and you roll a 1. I have to spend a CP to try and turn that into the value that I need.
And you might not.
A Sisters player. Exactly right. I still might not. A Sisters player just reaches over and they use another resource other than command points. And so there's actually like a really big snowball effect, like I was getting at, where the new mission changes, we can now cycle mission cards every turn. Mm-hmm. Every time you pick up a card and you don't want it, you can spend a CP to immediately in your command phase put it back and draw another one. Because you don't need to have your CP building up in the background for your big old push turns and things like that people need a critical mass to execute, you actually just open up your playbook. The whole playbook opens up because you have this whole other resource to execute.
I'm digging that. That's it. Seemed
welcome to my TED talk.
Yeah,
Miracle Dice TED talk complete.
that contrived consistency. Now you have to roll the die. Like, you could technically have a bunch of threes or whatever in your miracle pool. Doesn't typically happen. You know, you still get the same variance in there, and you can even turn those lower numbers into things if necessary. Like, you can use those to your advantage too. To just get more and more comfortable with your the way your army works. But it was really nice to see them doing as well as they did, considering, you know, the perception right after the codex dropped. And, you know, that whole adage of people like change, but no one likes to be changed, and the way the armies will have been built did significantly change. Like, there are now like three castigators in the list. Like, the Soratas are playing very similar to how Eldari played. Not in power, but just in function and form.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have said that Sisters feel like Space Marines and Eldar, and somewhere in the middle of two. They're not as durable as Space Marines. They're not quite as fast as Eldar, but they're kind of halfway between both. And I think it's perfect for where this book is at.
Yeah, I can see that.
It sounds like a pretty good place to be.
Phenomenon.
It is a pretty, well, you know, knocking on doors and winning tournaments all over the world. That is for sure. Tanya, you'll be happy to know that I saw two Morkanauts.
Yeah, my boy.
On a table.
Definitely out there.
We were able to stream a Thunderhawk game.
I did catch a little bit of that. And every time I looked at like the down on the table, it was just all Thunderhawk. It just seemed like it took up the entire thing.
I think we did two Thunderhawk games. I think we did. We did the original Thunderhawk that we spotted in Tacoma 3 years ago. He brought it back with Paladins and Grey Knights and stuff. And then there was another Grey Knight Thunderhawk. So, you know, and he actually said, it's like, I saw that guy having so much fun. I was inspired. So I got my own Thunderhawk.
Love it. I love those stories like that.
And we had a Warhound Titan versus a Stompa on stream.
Amazing.
That was a crazy game. So the orc player was basically having a competition with himself and his friends back home about how many hazardous wounds he could do to himself.
Amazing.
I think that was round two. It might have been round two. And he had already done 44 wounds to himself.
That seems like it's quite orky. That checks out.
It might have been round three just for the sheer number of wounds, but it was early in the event.
That's hilarious.
I mean, too. And he did win the game. You know, it was Stompa versus the Warhound. And the Warhound was Chaos Knights, and it had a ton of War Dogs with him.
Which was pretty cool to see, too.
It was very cool. And it really, you know, Stompa did Stompa things and finally got in there. And I think the Stompa killed the Warhound, and the Stompa was only two wounds. And most of the rest of the army was dead. I think there was no War Dogs and maybe one or two Killicans left.
Amazing.
It was a bloodbath.
Nice.
The players were having a wonderful time.
I also saw that you got some models that I painted on the stream. Very excited, because I'm never going to get on a stream game. So seeing somebody else play the models that I've painted, it's like the next best thing for me.
That was the Tyranids, right? The Alex McDougal
game?
Yeah,
sure was.
Yeah.
They look great.
I didn't paint all of them. I don't think he listens to this, so I can say that guy refuses to use a wash. And then I'll hand back the ones that I painted and be like, oh, these look really good. And then I'll be like, yeah, I used a wash.
How does he refuse to use a wash?
I don't know. It's been like 6 years of me trying to like convince him, like, oh, if you just throw a wash on these, it'll look great. Nope, no interest.
Well, I wonder if he's just dug his heels in. Now it's just to spite you.
It probably is, honestly. That's about what our friendship is like, so I wouldn't doubt it at all.
He is an incredibly nice guy, but I could see how that might be something to hold on to. Or maybe it's just to finally convince you to paint them all. It's Tyranids.
He knows, be careful.
Yeah,
he knows it's not going to happen. I'd be more likely to do it with his Gene Stealer cult, because I think they're more fun. But, you know, I like to paint the odd one here and there. Like, if there's ever a new release, he'll be like, do you want? I'll be like, yeah, I do want.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that we got such a, like, diverse series of games on. And, of course, Hobby was high up there. But then being able to get, like, the Thunderhawks and the Stompa and the Warhound on at the same time while telling the story of the event was important to me. And I think that was cool that we were able to do it.
I mean, the whole field was actually pretty diverse. It was pretty interesting to see. Pretty exciting.
How did the overall rankings end up in terms of diversity? Was the top 10, like, pretty diverse?
I'm on it.
Oh, it certainly felt like it. There was, you know, walking around and just anecdotally, it felt like there was like a lot of Custodes there. It felt like there was a lot of Votan there.
I mean, I can see Custodes because they're easy to travel with. So that makes sense that you'd see a lot of them. I heard whispers in the chat. People were talking about how there was a lot of Thousand Suns doing
a ton of Thousand Suns. The Thousand Suns made up the majority, now by percent, you know, like 18%, 19% of the top 32.
Interesting. It's interesting to me because, like, the skill cap for that army is quite high, right?
Yeah, and it's even gotten harder since the latest balanced data slate, where a couple of their more, well, abusive bits that they could do with, like, the triple move and stuff like that have been shut down. So they need to get a little more creative again. But, man, T-Sun's playing a fight, finding a way. I've got that top 10 for you if you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Only undefeated was Orcs, and then it was Adeptus Sororitas, Leagues of Votan, Space Wolves, Tyranids, Dark Angels, Astra Militarum, Thousand Suns, Tau, and Thousand Suns. So the only double up there was Thousand Suns. That means there's 9 different factions in the top 10.
I love it.
That's beautiful.
An interesting thing to note that makes me sad is then in the top 32, there were 0 Blood Angel players.
Wow, that is... Yeah, what's going on, Paul?
I don't. Yeah.
Did you walk around like dressed as Horus or something? Like, and they all got distracted.
It's distracted
like,
them all.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. I can't explain it. I mean, other than the fact that we know that something we say is that the meta is a living, breathing organism. And so people may have just come prepared for that level of
true. Energy. Yeah, true.
I did also learn, though, that the Thunderwolf spam from Space Wolves is incredibly popular up there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Huge.
Sorry, and a lot of Space Wolf players were playing that. So the way what they were saying for local players is that you either have to be playing that or have an answer for that. And I don't know that if like some of the people that just favor that kind of raw aggression instead of playing Blood Angels, they played that. Like, I don't know how many Blood Angels were in the field to begin with, but it seemed like there was an alternate form of assault. If you needed to scratch that itch, that's more popular
people,
in that area.
Thundercav, they really looked like they were, you know, I almost felt like I was, it was funny, I was joking with some of the other judges that felt like we were headed back towards like 7th edition with the Dog Star, Thundercav that we were seeing out there, and just how resilient they are and how they're holding into it. So it was pretty interesting to see for sure.
Mm.
And speaking about that Adeptus Artas player, what's the gentleman's name that came in second?
Tell you Scott, in one moment. Right? Yeah, just loading up right now. Turns out 400-ish odd players takes a moment to load. yes, Scott Ketchum.
That's right. I couldn't remember his last name. But he basically locked up the Thunderwolves. Like, they couldn't, between the terrain and his models that he was willing to throw away to win the game and some tactical maneuvers, just lock down the Space Wolves. They could not get past midfield. It was really interesting to see.
That's what you got to do. And I'm assuming that's was the scout moves off the Dominions in the Immolators that let them get out into those alleyways. And then, of course, you just block them up with the Immolators. They have to charge the Immolators. Then the Dominions get out, and you're just doing exactly the same thing again. So really good tactic, really strong. I think it's important to get the scouts. I mean, of course, it's scout versus scout, infiltrate versus infiltrate at times with some of these things. But when you are into a meta that has these real high-pressure lists, especially ones that can't go around buildings, so can't go through walls, through ruins, really important to get an infiltrating unit or two just to make sure you get some insurance that you're going to get a movement phase in your turn one.
Yeah, it was watching the maneuvers and positioning and clearly not just looking about the thinking about the turn they were on, but like seemingly two turns in advance kind of thing. I thought was fun to watch and a good clinic for folks that may be, you know, looking to improve in that area. When you start looking at some of your models and your units just as game pieces instead of tiny little treasures with their own goals and ambitions, you know, if that makes sense. But let's take a quick break. We'll come back to the second part of the show. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Still talking about the Tacoma Open and the moving around. I feel like in that last game versus the Orcs that the Adeptus Artas got just, this is just my read on it, just got a little too ambitious with his unit of Paragons more involved. And if he'd left them about an inch or two back, then the next round might have gone a little bit better for him. But I think it's also real easy to want to bring that unit up to try to close off the Orcs player's ability to stay in the game. So it really became touch and go there for both players. And
it's also very easy to say that in hindsight, right? And especially seeing as, like, and I say we, the commentators, get the bird's eye view a lot of the time, which is actually, and for people at home watching the coverage, that is the best view of the table. That is a better view of the table than the players are getting. And a lot of the time, you know, without the proper perspective, you actually don't know where and how far and what threat ranges are for a lot of units. And that top down really shows you just clean as day. If anything, if anybody's wants to just do one very simple thing to like up their game, the start of every turn, walk around the table. Adam's number one tip, walk around the table at the start of every turn and just suss everything out. The amount of times I've moved into a range of units like charges that I did not want to or vice versa, the amount of times people have not caught very clear like rapid ingress pockets that they easily could have shut down and then I windmill slammed five Deathwing Knights into it in the next turn, stuff like that. And yeah, it might have been something as simple as that.
And believe me, I'm not second guessing the pilot at all. I really am not. Like, it could have been a situation where he knows he's done this 5 times and 4 times it's won the game for him, you know? So, you know, I'm happy to do that. I'm just more saying that, you know, one little bit of change and that might've taken the tournament, you know? So Sisters have it in them. They have that power, which is nice to see. Are they the best army in the game? Like, that's not, I mean, what do y'all think?
The best in the game. I mean, you know, to say that they're a mix of Eldar and Space Marines, I think that they do take the best out of some of those. I do think the Miracle Dice mechanic is great. I think that they've got some awesome characters and they can play well. I think their versatility is up. Like they think, well, Toughness 3 can't be that good with just because they've got Space Marine armor, but they hold their own. I don't think that they're the best. I do think that they find that spot between Eldar and Space Marines well. I think that that's fair and that they're good, but I don't think that they're unruly.
And I'm going to be controversial and say that there isn't one best in the game, because the pilot's playstyle is probably going to have a big say over what's going to be most effective in that player's hands. So is it at the top? Sure. Is it the best? For some people, probably.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to be linking back to, looking at that top 10, like with 90% of the top 10 being unique. We are seeing that consistently across many events. That means that the top finisher, you know, let's say all things being equal, though, they come one game away from taking the whole thing. And there's no one true, like, king or queen at the top of that right now. So I feel like the meta is kind of in a good place. But the Depositaris definitely have some tools to compete. And I think anything that takes that variance out in a field where all things are equal, maybe that does nudge it into the best. But by a slim enough margin to where it's not overbearing, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I think the state of the game is in such a good place. We actually get to have this debate. Like, is there a best army in the game at the moment? Is there a best faction? I'd argue of all the factions in contention for that title, Sisters likely have the most tools available to them. But that doesn't mean they're the best. In my opinion, when I look at I suppose the faction that has the most depth that can be played to meet any threat and be good on every mission, that is Sisters for me. But Blood Angels wield more power, like wield more aggression, more melee. Tyranids have more jank. Eldari still have the infinity units that Sisters used to have. I mean, it is really up for debate. I mean, Canis Rex is going through walls. Grey Knights are jumping all over the place. Thousand Suns seem just perpetually problematic. Like, just no one likes playing T-Suns. You play against a good T-Suns player, and you're like, crap. He's going to do all sorts of stuff, and then I'm not going to be able to do anything back. You know, he's going to pop out, hit me with 2 Doom Bolts, and then for some reason, I'm not going to be able to get to that guy, and that kind of stuff. So it really is a player's
deal. Nailed the Thousand Sun experience, yeah.
Can you tell that I have deep scars?
Okay, but I also have deep scars. I feel like Paul might also have deep scars from ATC.
Necrons?
Necrons did it to me. Yeah, they did. It really did. You know, with that Thousand Suns, the super guns, I was like, that's the one time I got aggressive and I truly paid for it. Yeah, Thousand Suns are like incredibly strong, and they're in the thing that shocked me was that there were I think of the top 32 they made up close to 20% of the top 32.
Yeah, wow.
At the end. But I think they are a unit and army that do kind of let you skill express with them a bit, because you don't have a ton of units and you've got to be real careful and direct with them.
Well, my advice to anybody who asks me how to kill or beat Thousand Suns is to kill everything that doesn't have a character attached to it as fast as you can, and then make them use the units that have characters attached to them to hold objectives and to score points. And as soon as you can make them do that, you start getting opportunities.
That's great advice. And that's actually great advice for anybody struggling against any army like Tau or whatever, because, you know, what we hear from players that have power units that they rely on and those armies that seem to kind of shake out that way is that they lose more games when their opponents force them to try to play the game. And what I mean by that is use score objectives, you know, beyond primaries, you know, do tasks and actions with their units that they would definitely prefer not to be doing that with.
In addition to that, it's way harder for Thousand Suns armies to do a lot of the cards now. A lot of the actions abilities, you can no longer advance. You know, you have to be in the same place doing it through your opponent's turn. So forcing them to do that with their rubrics instead, you know, with associated character, be that a sorcerer, infernal master, as opposed to cultists, Zangors, or Zangor Enlightened, is huge. It's absolutely massive. So getting those small utility units off the table ASAP, even if you could theoretically, you know, have a swing at some rubric marines, you know, and possibly maybe take care of the unit, when that same thing can guarantee kill, you know, one of those utility units, I say go for the utility units, stress out their scoring ability, and all of a sudden they go from an army that has a very high score ceiling to, you know, maybe, you know, maybe they can no longer score over 70 points for that game.
Oh, I like that. I like that approach. Keep, you know, just throwing out some tips as these, we're seeing these armies become more and more prevalent. And you know what? Nobody likes to take mortal wounds, but sometimes you do.
Indeed.
So what else was high in the top 10 or the top 32? Because there were a few. Sisters, I think, was up there. I think those are probably the armies to beat.
Yes. Quite a few Tyranids as well. Decent representative of Tyranids. I'm actually surprised to see quite a few demons as well. They're towards the, you know, the lower end of the top 32, but still a couple of demons. Three at the back end. That's pretty good. Yeah. Tons of Thousand Suns, like you said. A couple of Necrons here and there. A good amount of Tyranids. Some real spicy Tyranid lists are doing very well. Handful of Guard, and then yeah, smattering of Space Marines. The top Space Marine army was Space Wolves in fourth place, and then Dark Angels in sixth place, for anybody wondering about that. I am just going to quickly look at the Space Wolves list. I do assume it is just
Thunder Wolves, Canis Rex,
and or Bunga.
Yeah. Is it the one with Canis Rex in it?
Champions of Russ. Just going to quickly scroll down. Yes, Canis Rex, Max Thunderwolf Cav. Oh, no.
That army won best overall, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. I'm talking about freehand, great base effects, ice, you know, just gorgeous.
It did really well.
Do you know, what do you call it in bowling when you know, when the little kiddies are playing and just want to have a good time and like the sides come up so they can't bowl?
Put up the rails.
Yeah, put up the rails. That's what this list looks like to me. It's like, I'm going to go first, and the Thunderwolf Cav are going to put up the rails. So the Canis just gets a strike, just bowling balls straight on through. No avoiding, no nothing. I love it. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, and great play too. Like with the paint and the great play, it's really a pleasure to see that almost like triple threat seemed to be a nice guy as well. As far as like the player goes, so well deserved on that position. But what was in the Dark Angel list?
I do believe it is a Gladius, because I actually had a look at this myself. Yeah, Gladius Task Force. Let me just see if it's got 15 Deathwing Knights. Yes, it does. Okay. You know everything you need to know about this list. Double Vindicator as along with the Deathwing Knights. So this is a chunk, very chunky list.
I've seen the Double Vindicator used in several different Marine armies.
And in Chaos Space Marines as well, to know. Like, the Vindicator has, well, I mean, the last time I saw a Vindicator was in early 8th edition when they had that line bombardment stratagem where if you shot three of them at the same point...
You had three of them, yeah.
Everything exploded with mortal wounds.
You hear that super audible sigh. Vindicators, because since World Eaters don't have them anymore.
I know.
Oh...
I know it may sound like we're jumping around, but I'm trying to highlight some of the things that are like kind of standout units that are doing really well for players, and then the consistency in which that we see them. And the weapon on the Vindicator is no joke. I mean, it is 24-inch blast, D6 plus 3 shots, strength 14, negative 3 damage with a D6, I'm sorry, negative 3 AP, D6 damage.
Yeah, the demolish for cannon, where everyone, like, you see a Russ on the table, you're like, oh, it's just a battle cannon. And then you see it with a demolish for cannon, you're like, okay, I really got to be concerned about that. Then you've got these Vindicators, and you're like, oh, it's space inside.
I think you're right. People discount on them, but quite significant. If they're thinking that the Marine, what do you think the thought process is there? Is that the player sees them on the other side and says and discounts them because they don't think that, you know, the Marine players should be taking that? Is that?
I mean, it's just one gun. Can't be that big of a deal, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a lot of it. It's just this little box with a little nub on it. You're like, eh, it can't be that big. And it picks up units by itself.
Well, it's also, you know, toughness 11, 11 wounds with a 3+ save. So, sorry, 2+, 2+ save.
Yeah, it's got some durability, and it's a little surprising. And it's, it's one of my favorites. Ever since I saw that thing with its big old siege blade, you know, what the siege guard that it's got on it, it's going to bulldoze through things. It's fun.
That's what it does. Ray, this was your first time coming, and like, I think you judged for the event.
I did. Yeah. I was on the event staff, and I was because I was bouncing around through different things. I had an amazing time working with the GW team. It's one of the best teams that I've ever had the opportunity to work with, and I look forward to being able to do it again soon, hopefully. But it was awesome, and being a judge with the caliber of the folks that were judging that I was alongside, Jeremy Atkinson was the head judge this time, and he did an amazing job, and it was awesome following his lead and being part of that team. Really, really great event. It's not my first time in Tacoma, but it's my first time attending. It's actually my first open outside of the grand finale since I've gone to the Grand Narrative the last 2 years. This is my first open event, and it awesome, amazing event. Can't recommend it enough.
You got any big takeaways?
Standard that's kind of set with what the players receive, like the player packet. I think it was very interesting to see the terrain setups in play, and a lot, you know, with some of the commentary and Pariah Nexus playing itself out right now. I think it's really interesting to see and the standard that the GW team is setting. Here's how to conduct it. Here's how we go about it. Here's a way to do it. It's not the only way, but it is a way. I thought it was pretty well executed, all things considered. I mean, that's immodestly so, given that I was part of that process. But at the same time, there's a ton of hard work that goes into all these events, not just GW events. I mean, all of us have had hand in event organization at some point, and this is really good. When the stated kind of mission statement of it is to have a good time and just, you know, be part of and facilitate an event that everybody can have a good time. I think we saw that. I think I'd like to say the team is mission accomplished in that regard, which is really awesome.
Very nice.
It looks like everybody was having a good time.
Yeah, I echo that. The players, I think, definitely had a great experience. And there were people there that, you know, just came just to do the hobby stuff. There were people there just came to, you know, grab some stuff from the store. So, you know, if you're in the area and it's convenient for you to get to the U.S. Opens when it comes through town, you know, come check it out. It's a good time for everybody. All right. What's everybody working on hobby-wise?
Man, let me just say, from the Warcom, I've told everybody, I think everyone's kind of familiar with me personally right now. I'm in the middle of a move, right? So all my stuff is in storage. I just got a house. I'm going to start unpacking everything. And of course, my wife's going to kill me because the first thing I'm going to go do is make sure that all my 40K stuff is good.
Priorities.
Yeah, I mean, I may, you know, I'll survive, maybe. But the latest Warcom that dropped over this last weekend, Agents of the Imperium, and I am so stoked for that. I cannot wait to see what else is coming. I've got my own, like, I think I've talked about it before, like with the narrative and everything. I have my own inquisitorial retinue that I've built. I'm really excited to see how, like, what is next, where we're headed with it. So it's tons of fun. When I can dig my stuff out, I'm going to start prioritizing that.
Nice. What about you, Tanya?
Well, I thought that I have had a tournament at the end of August, but I'm a silly goose and it's actually the first weekend in August.
Oh.
So yeah, so I'm very quickly painting up a second Gorkonaut and a Snikrot model for my orc army for that. So that's what I'm working on, and it's a narrative event, and they just started showing off some of the narrative boards for it, and I'm getting really, really excited. So yeah, I'm going to be painting until the wee morning hours for a few days here, but yeah, I'm really excited to take Dreadmob out for a spin, because I went to the same event last year and basically brought a very, very similar list to this, and I didn't do too bad, and I won Best Painted, so I got to show up and try to, you know... Edric got to try and win that award again this year. So got to bring something new. So I'm going to bring another big robot.
Nice. Well, good luck. I'm still working on some Master Militarum stuff. This last weekend it was a little occupied, but hope to get some paint on some stuff this weekend. Next week I'll be at Gen Con. So if you're in that area, message me, see if you can come by and say hello. Always cool to run into each other in the hall or whatever.
Are you doing stuff with GW again?
Yeah, I'll be at the booth. I'll be like showing people how to play 40K and Kill Team.
Oh, that's so fun.
Like, maybe Blood Bowl, you know, but there's always cool stuff. Like it is totally fun to go to that convention, and is largely centered around games, just games of all kind. And I know a lot of people go, so if anybody's listening and wants to say hello, feel free to come by the booth. And that's our show this week. It's been a good one, and what a great couple of weeks for Warhammer. Yeah, looking forward to see what comes.
Me too.
All right, everybody, please don't forget to hit the like, share, subscribe, leave us those 5-star reviews if you haven't already. That means a lot to us. It's a way to kind of show the algorithm that other people should come listen as well. And with that said, we'll see y'all next week, everybody. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.